Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. 74 years ago, an American B-24 Liberator bomber known as the Tulsa American fell from the sky while returning from a mission over Europe. It eventually sank into the Adriatic Sea. 7 crew members survived the crash and were rescued. 3 men were never found. In an effort to unlock the mystery of what happened to the missing airmen, NOVA, the U.S. Department of Defense, the Croatian Navy, and an elite team of underwater archaeologists and divers excavate the wreckage of the last B-24 ever built. NOVA premieres Last B-24 tomorrow night. It's at 8 Central on STPB-TV. And joining us now with more on the episode, Owen Palmquist. He is writer of Last B-24. Owen Palmquist, welcome to In the Moment. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Let's start by talking about this really incredible team and how it was all put together for this particular mission.
So the unit within the Department of Defense that is tasked with this mission is known as the DPAA, the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency. And so they're kind of the nucleus of these efforts, and their sort of congressionally mandated task is to recover the tens of thousands of missing in action, American service personnel missing in action around the world, dating back as far as World War II. And so whenever they are able to get actionable information, I guess, to pursue a fallen service member, then they start to investigate it and put together a team. So in this case, they worked with the Croatian government since the wreck site was in the territorial waters of Croatia. And then they contracted with private archaeologists, underwater archaeologists, led by Dr. Brendan Foley. And so this sort of whole team together, elements of Croatian military, elements of the DOD, and then private scientists, was the team that was kind of assembled together to then investigate this site. And, you know, what they had hoped to do was recover remains. And as it turns out, they were successful. So.
Let's talk about the challenges that need to be overcome for the mission, because just as you explained, assembling the team, that's a huge bureaucratic and the paperwork and the clearances that need to happen. But there are also some real physical challenges. This is a dangerous mission. Tell us a little bit about an archaeological mission underwater.
Yeah, absolutely. So the depth of the wreck site was at 135 feet, which is not exactly sort of an amateur dive. And one of the things that sort of very early on in the dive mission became clear to us on the production side, on the documentary side, was while all the underwater archaeologists are trained, they're experienced, you know, they've been doing this for a number of years, they are first and foremost scientists, which not only means they're not diving every day, but it also means, as scientists can often do, they are at risk of getting lost in their work. And when you're under 135 feet of water, that's not a really great place to become distracted. So that's why this particular group, one of the huge components, was a safety diving team led by Phil Short, who was down there, and they instituted what they described to us as the guardian system. And essentially any scientist who was on the bottom was constantly shadowed by a guardian who would basically just watch over them and make sure, you know, if air was running out, then it's time to head back to the surface. And that system, you know, literally a second team following the first team, ended up adding a layer of safety and security, which, you know, normally is a huge concern when you're talking about a site like this. So definitely that was on everyone's mind the whole time.
It's a great metaphor for life, too. You should just always have a guardian telling you.
Absolutely.
You have someone like that in your life, Owen, they're like, let's take a break. You're really working hard on this. Come back.
Yes,
get some air.
My wife.
Okay, go get some air. Let's talk about the challenge from a scientific perspective. How hard is it to find human remains at this point, 70 years later, at this kind of crash site underwater? Tell me the scientific challenge of that as well.
Absolutely. So when the DPAA, the group within the DOD, sets out on these missions that, you know, are a tremendous amount of resources and time and you know, emotional energy even. You know, they only are able to really prioritize those places where they think there's a good chance of recovery, but that is by no means a guarantee that they will find the remains they're looking for. I mean, it has been a lifetime underwater. While there were eyewitness accounts of the crash, and some of those, the last surviving member of the air crew, we interviewed him shortly before he passed, and so his account is in the film. But when you hear these accounts, while they give some details as to what happened, I mean, we're talking about an airplane crash that these men barely survived. So details are thin, you know, and so when we, I shouldn't say we, when the diving crew, the archaeologists got down there, they knew kind of where they wanted to look, but halfway through the excavations, they hadn't really come up with anything. And obviously for everyone involved, that's a little nerve-wracking. And so really all that they could do was the work that they are trained to do, and they very methodically went through the site. And as it turns out, sort of following a second and then a third, you know, sort of backup area, they eventually were able to recover remains. So I think there was a period of time, certainly on the film crew side, where we were very nervous that, you know, we might come back and only have part of the story to tell. Interesting as it was, you always want a happy ending, so to speak, in terms of finding what you went to go look for. So
let's talk about the emotional journey, because as the film crew, you're creating something and you're telling the story, you're weaving these other stories into this process as well. There's a family who is waiting for details. It's an emotional journey for them. And then the crew itself, when they find something that they believe, okay, yes, well, let's, you know what, let's talk about the first thing that they find, which is really a wedding ring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's as a storyteller, as a filmmaker. Now, I should qualify by saying I was not in the field, but I worked very closely with Kirk Wolfinger, who was the director, who was in the field. And obviously, I spend so much time with the hours and hours of footage that I'm very close to sort of how it played out. But you know, as filmmakers and storytellers in this situation and others that I've been on, you know, you really always want to remember that as much as we're there to tell the story, this is someone's life that we have the privilege of observing and documenting. So absolutely, when that first ring came in, to see the reactions of the crew, I mean, there were many of them at a loss for words. It was just really impactful and very powerful. You know, I think a wedding ring in particular is more than perhaps a boot or you know, a seatbelt harness or something. It's a very personal, you can imagine the individual behind that. So a very potent moment, I think, and really sort of emblematic of the kind of stuff that you're dealing with. This isn't just a story about a scientific archaeological dig. This is a story about bringing someone home, someone's father, you know, in the case of Lieutenant Eugene Ford, who was the pilot who was recovered from the wreckage.
Why is the wreckage itself such a mess? Why is it so tangled compared to some of the research on in fact, at this halfway through the expedition, there's another wreckage that is almost intact. Tell us a little bit about the B-24 and its reputation for sort of breaking apart when it crash landed.
Absolutely. So the B-24 and the B-17 both widely used in World War II. The B-24 had a few advantages just in terms of its design that made it very popular, at least amongst Allied planners. So it was extensively used, but one of the things that it suffered as a disadvantage, again, due to that design, was the B-17, if you ever have the opportunity to look at the two planes side by side, the B-17 has sort of a low wing, so that essentially you have a very flat plane that, I'm sorry, a plane as in not an airplane,
right,
but a flat sort of low surface that allows those planes, when landing on water or on land, to kind of glide down. And as a result, they tend to weather crash landings a little bit better. The B-24, on the other hand, its body, its undercarriage is slung underneath the wings. It has a very high wing, which means as soon as it hits the water, its most vulnerable piece, the weak kind of bomb bay area, is what hits first. And as a result, these things basically explode on impact, especially with the water. If you look, one of the elements in the show is a piece of footage recorded around towards the end of World War II, a very slow, controlled landing of a B-24 on the water done here back here in the U.S. And even at that slow rate, the thing just shreds as soon as it hits the water. So really, if you were a B-24 crew, you wanted to do everything you could to avoid hitting the water. And that's exactly what this crew was trying to do. They knew they would not get back to their base in Italy, so they tried to make an emergency landing at this strip on this little island in Croatia, one of the only Allied-controlled islands in the area. And unfortunately, they just fell short.
And you mentioned it earlier, but you were able to speak with someone who was there and who was rescued and said, you know, I could have reached out and sort of touched the shoulder of the men who are still presumably under sea in this wreckage. He was able to walk away. Well, he was, you know, able to make it to the surface and be rescued by a boat. How significant were his memories sort of playing into the overall piecing together of where to search, you know, what we're searching for? Talk a little bit about the human component to sort of providing the knowledge for the scientific discovery.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you come to, especially a site like this that's underwater, when you have, a limited amount of time to be down on their bottom, the human stories are immensely important, because those are what guide the archaeological team as to where they want to look. So Val Miller, he was the bombardier on board the Tulsa American. He did survive. And as he mentions in his interview and in his other written recollections of the event, he was seated right behind or right next to all these individuals because they knew they were trying to come in for a landing. So they were all sort of seated in position. And so as he recalls it, exactly as you said, he could have reached out and touched the pilot. The navigator was there as well. The flight engineer, according to his recollection, was also in the area. The flight engineer tended to move around inside the plane, but all of them were right there. And so that became a hugely important piece of information for the archaeologists who started in the remains of the cockpit as their primary area to look for. And as it turns out, having looked through all the remains of what used to be the cockpit and they came up short, that's when they were forced to start looking elsewhere.
Talk a little bit here, as we just have another minute left or so, but just about some of the scientific technology that we'll see in this new NOVA, a last B-24 documentary. The scientific advances that are making this identification possible, what's new?
Absolutely. So there's a huge amount of DNA technology, which is always advancing. In terms of what's new, I don't know if I could completely explain exactly the nuances of it. So instead, I'll talk more about some of the technology they had in the field. So typically, archaeology is really just about a huge component of it is digging up sediment, soil, and sifting through it to see what you can find. In this case, the archaeologists were able to bring two I think essentially brand new technologies to bear. One was on the seafloor. They used flashlights that essentially shine at a wavelength that causes human bone to fluoresce, which allows them to kind of speed up their initial search process. And then there's a larger stationary system that they invented called they dubbed it the Blue Light Special. And it essentially takes all this debris that they've pulled up from the bottom, and it scans it under a similar sort of wavelength of light, and then the machine picks up objects that fluoresce. And they were actually able to find quite a few remains as a result of this technology that they may have otherwise missed in the course of just a visual observation. So a lot of new tech coming into it, really in pursuit of finding these tiny, tiny traces.
Right. And it all goes back to this quest we have of bringing these tens of thousands of American service members home to the burials that they deserve and closure for the. It's a really emotional Nova, and I thank you for it, Owen.
Yes, it was a pleasure, and thank you so much for having me.
Owen Palmquist is a writer for Nova. He wrote Last B-24. The show premieres tomorrow night. See it at 8 p.m. Central, 7 Mountain on SDPB-TV.